Hello, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Stephen the Warman Writes Kickfighting Podcast Show. I'm your host, Stephen the Warman. You are listening to this podcast in one of two ways. Either you are at my blog, which is lordgaul.podbean.com. I usually upload a show to that once a week, once every 2 weeks. This is the longest gap I've had in a while. I think I'm on a gap of about 16 days since the last time I recorded, so my apologies. Just got super busy. A lot of things scheduled, and I got a lot of fights coming up because of a lot of those who know me. I train high-level mixed martial artists for my work, and I've got Johnny Hendricks getting ready to go, and then my heavyweight Jared Rochal just got a fight in Australia with Stefan Struve, and then I've got a bunch of local fighters, and I got busy and I wasn't able to sit down and make the time for it, so I apologize for that. So I usually upload something to my blog, but the most efficient way to get the podcast is just to simply go to the iTunes search engine, put Warman Kickfighting Show, or enter Lord Gaul, LORDGAUL, which was my username back when I first got into kickboxing, first got into the fight forums, Cockatoogie, K1 Fans, K1 USA, and so on. So also hit me up at the Twitter.com/StephenTheWarman. So we'll jump right into it. Got a lot to talk about. Biggest news of the last, week and a half, 2 weeks and a half, if you will, would be the return of Badahari. He fights very rarely, and of course there was a lot going on, of course, because this card in particular was, there was a lot of skepticism about it, the Ahmed fight show, that it was kind of run by shady people and that sort of deal or whatever. But in the end, I really thought that the card itself wasn't that great, but I did think that the main event lived up to it. It was a Badahari fight. And basically what happened was Badahari had a hot start. He was able to score two downs in the first round. One he scored when Ismael Lant was attempting a knee. He caught him in the air. Another one he caught him with a barrage. He's always, I think the right hand was the one who caused the first down. And second round, Badahari's in control, still doing well. And Ismael Lant backs him up and lands a big overhand right that drops Badahari. And this is something that I really want to give Badahari credit for. He's had a couple moments in the last few years, like with Zabit Samedov, for example, where it just looked like he just was done with trying, like he just was fatigued. And I remember his body was in bad shape when he fought Samedov, and it was his big return after a while, and he just didn't seem like he was into it, and then he just almost like he was fine with being out. And if you see the documentary that he had, he'd mentioned in his career that, in his words, I was being a pussy is how he was how he described it when he looked at his fight with Ruslan Karev, and he was down and he was kicked in the ground and he was just trying to get a point. He said there was nothing wrong with me. I was just trying to get a point. He has admitted that he has these moments in his career where he just, for whatever reason, he's so mad about a certain situation and he just blows up by the way things go down, or he just gives up. But there are also times when you look at his fight with the second fight with Ruslan, where he went down and he got up and he knocked Ruslan right out. And then there was the time where he was dropped by Errol Zimmerman and he got up and he knocked Errol Zimmerman down twice, the second knockdown being a KO. He has, when he shows heart, when he gets up, He's definitely gonna deliver once again. And when he got up from the down from Lant, he was able to score down later in that round, and then he was able to score another knockdown in a third. And they had a four knockdown rule in the fight. A lot of people were upset about this because the rule wasn't made clear to them beforehand, so people had to kind of describe it. Dennis Corman, for example, did a really good job on Twitter of just saying, hey, just so you guys know that was the rules. It was a four knockdown equals a KO for the three round fight, but when a guy's able to fight, I want them to keep pushing. And I really thought that Ismael Lant was capable of continuing, and it was just a single fight, so I would have liked it to go on. With that said, Badahari performed in what I think the kind of fight that makes him special. He's never been a guy who he's awesome when it all comes together. He's always been a guy where, I said it before, I believe the best version of him that I've seen in K1 was his fight with Glavy Fitoza. Like, that was the fight where I really looked at it and I go, man, this guy's just a kickboxing machine. When he gets his combinations and low kicks going, he gets his 1-2 to a switch high kick going, I really think he's kickboxing well. But he's always had really good power, like really good, he's always been able to crack. Even when his body was wiry and he was fighting heavyweights when he weighed 88 kgs, he is a exceptional puncher, like one of the more exceptional punchers in the history of the sport of heavyweight kickboxing. And when he gets the moments, when he scores the right kind of shots or whatever, he's able to get guys in trouble. The thing that was the most, you know, telling joke about this whole card is the idea that was Ismael Lott warned beforehand to not give us good a fight? Was he warned to throw the fight away? Was he warned to stop? Was he told to give up? Was it, it was just this big ongoing thing where people were just convinced that because of the, you know, shady influences on the fight card and the fact that the guy wanted Badahari to win and only clap when Badahari did good and look worried when Badahari was down. Because of those moments, people wondered if, you know, even before the fight, if Ismael Lott was going to give a really good effort. Shout out to Ismael Lott, who gave a fantastic effort. He came in and he threw heat the whole time. When he and the shot that he hit Badahari with the right hand was a mean shot. And it shows the will of Hari to get up and bounce back from that, because that thing was just a vicious, vicious overhand right. But he was game. He was willing to keep fighting. I would have liked it to keep going. But Badahari gets another big win, and, you know, he'll move forward. And his move forward just seems to be whatever next super fight they put together for him. It varies. I mean, there's been names thrown around. Promotions have tried to do things. But he clearly isn't fighting on the level that I think he should. I think he should be fighting the Rico Verhoevens of the world. I think he should be fighting the Daniel Guidas of the world. Isn't it weird that he's never fought Daniel Guida? That doesn't even sound right. You know what I'm saying? Like, that should have been a elite K-1 match at some period of time, him versus, again, Daniel Guida. And it just never turned out. So off the top of my head, I can't remember those two fighting. And it's just, and Daniel Guida, who's been out of action for a while, that's sad in itself. But man, I really want to see this guy compete. You know, he's beaten Anderson Broderick Silva a couple times. He's, you know, I want to see him return to fighting elite guys, glory level guys, and I want him to get the recognition his talent is due. Now, some people, of course, were getting on saying that his performance wasn't the greatest. And in my mind, I'm like, I know what I've got from him. And the way that there was a period of time where I had to just give up on the notion of Alexei Ignashev being what I thought he was going to be. I really thought Alexei Ignashev was going to be that guy for quite some time to come. But in the way that I had to give up on that one day and say, hey, he has all the tools, but it just seems like the outside factors in his life are going to keep that from happening. I have also given up on the idea that Badahari will be the kickboxing version of himself when he fought Glabe Fitoza. But the version I have now is still a high-level kickboxer who's got some crack and is going to be in some fights that people want to see over and over and over. So even if you didn't feel that this is the most, you know, complete clean performance, it was a pretty fun heavyweight kickboxing fight. And I hope that Badahari gets the opportunity to fight elite level guys, whether they do some, you know, as I was saying on Twitter, do a show in England, you know, do a show in Japan and bring Badahari in, give him the opportunity to be on those cards for glory, because I really do think that he's still a huge draw, still very popular. And if, you know, glory ever goes to like Morocco, they could literally put together a card the way that the UFC puts together their Brazilian cards and so on. They've got so many good fighters from that fan base, and they could put a bunch of B-sides and just have the hugest draw that they could ever imagine. But I'm hoping that Badahari gets bigger opportunities like that. I don't like that he fights once or twice a year and pretty much just kind of, you know, shows video of him, you know, lifting weights and stuff like that. I want him kicking and punching people in the face. Other fight in this card is Zabit Samedov as he goes against Zevid Podorok. I did not know Zevid Podorok was even fighting anymore. I thought he had retired until I saw that this fight was, you know, coming together. Zabit Samedov is just a much better kickboxer, and he is a very skilled guy who also needs to be in the conversation when you think about glory. When you think about those elite 209 pound, you know, their light heavyweight division, you know, he, even though Tyrone Spong beat him quite handily, I look at that division, I see that a lot of guys that he'd be in some pretty entertaining fights with. You know, his style, I mean, him and Calavari would be a lot of fun, you know, to see how his movement goes and his angles and his hand speed. I just want to see him against the, you know, the Artem Vakhachev. I want to see him go against these guys on a consistent basis. I really hope that he gets that opportunity again, because Zabit Samedov really is a talented fighter. It just, I hate that he is as well has just been fighting on these kind of, you know, obscure cards in the, you know, Middle East and I mean, I won't say that he's not getting paid okay for these opportunities, but I do think that I want everyone kickboxing to be in some sort of fight that moves the story of your career forward. And this is just another win. Like, it doesn't move his story anywhere. You know, I mean, that was the thing that we had with K1. We knew that every win went towards the story of who's going to be the winner at the end of the year. And that's what I really like us to get back to as far as high-level kickboxing. And I really want Zabit Samedov to be one of the guys to get that opportunity. I'm going to go ahead and go to the stadiums. I'm going to talk about a lot of stadium fights. I'm going to do the stadiums. I'll do 9 fights. I'll do over the past. I'll go all the way back to the 20th of August. So I'll go 14 days. So I'll do 9 fights. We'll break these down to the best of my ability. And I will hopefully break it down in a way that gets people interested in full rules Muay Thai. I had one of the most honoring messages where somebody said that the thing that got them into Thai fighting was the way that I broke down some of the stadium fights and how I told them where to get a hold of it and follow it. And man, that made me feel really good because I felt like there's just a select community of people who, when they listen to the show, that they'll really check out the full stadium rules stuff. But I assure you, if I say a fight's awesome on here, you really want to go check that fight out. Like, I am not failing you in those regards. So really, I mean, take the opportunity, sit down, go check these fights out. The ones, I'll mention 9, as I said before, but the ones that I really want you to see, I'll make sure that I make a point to kind of separate them. Take your time. Go ahead. Go to YouTube right now if you have the opportunity. Press pause, or I'll go ahead and ramble a little bit so you can get over there. And then you definitely want to subscribe and follow a guy by the name of Muay Thais, M-U-A-Y, and then Thais, T-I-E-S, like the way you tie a shirt. And I've mentioned this gentleman before because he does a really good job of uploading stadium stuff. And it's because of him that I'm able to get such in-depth breakdowns because of the consistency that he's done as far as uploading shows. I really, really appreciate it because he helps me to, you know, in my knowledge as a coach, always learning all the time, but just in my love of combat sports, I really like that he's done a great job of uploading these fights. So we're going to go ahead and go through the ones that he has done over the last, you know, since the 20th, as I mentioned before. We're going to go ahead and start with the Rogers Stadium, and we're going to go with the fight of Thonadette versus Anachai, and Anachai gets the KO here. And one of my favorite things about this KO is sometimes the best time to look for an elbow is as you guys are in extended clinch or as you're reaching to get into the clinch. And I think Anachai did a really good job, and the moment that he saw the clinch coming, he uses, I believe it was his left elbow, where he slapped the arm down and he fired the elbow over the top, and he landed it like not so much the temple, it looked more like it was around the jawline, kind of like under the ear. And you could see immediately Thonadette was in trouble. He was like in bad shape, and then some hands came in to clean it all up before the ref was able to come in and kind of like save the fight, almost as if he was trying to set the fight up for give him a standing eight, or you know, give him the opportunity before he was blown out. But the damage was already done. Anachai's hands came in too quick, too fast, and cleaned it all up, and he got the KO victory over at Thonadette. Next fight I'm going to talk about was a, this is one of those that you really want to get a look at. Werepunlek versus Theporit. I'll go ahead and spell that out for you. Weerapanlek for Werepunlek. And then Theporit was Theporit. And the reason why I want you guys to focus on these fights, or this fight in particular, because it really was an active war in terms of the pace was just really high, the aggression was really high, but in it, despite the fact that there's a lot of exchanges, there's a lot of biting down on the mouthpiece, there's a lot of looking for elbows in close, there was some clinch, definitely some clinch in there, but a lot of the aggression just came with looking for hands and elbows for Werepunlek. I just thought Theporit did a really good job of finding clean offense despite the fact that they were throwing bombs. And I think that that's really going to be the separator, and it's the thing that causes elite athletes, elite fighters, to really have a significant advantages over a lot of the fighters that they're with. Because if it comes down to it, if they got to get into a gunfight, if you will, if there's going to be a firefight, they are going to be the ones that can most find consistent offense. Like, they're going to be the ones that can still score clean, where the other person just rely upon the openness, because you guys are both throwing blows, you're both open. And one person's just relying upon, I'm going to bite down, and one of these is going to get through. The other person is, I know we're biting down, but I'm looking and I'm picking my shots. I know exactly when I want to score. I know exactly what I want to hit. And I thought Theporit was the guy to do that, and thus he got the decision in this. Next fight on the card is one of the more interesting fights that I'm going to talk about. Pat Boonsong is going to have one of the most baffling, I mean, it goes down to the scoring. It really goes down to the scoring and the value of cuts. But he has a loss to Sukpet that I really thought that, man, if the view or the perception of elbow or of cuts was different, he would have a much different, you know, outcome in this fight. I really, truly believe that. But that's not the case. The case of it is the cut scores extremely high on the Thai scoring system. Like, if somebody's cutting their bleeding, it scores extremely high. Basically, what happens is a Sukpet comes out, and he uses his distance well. He has a weird type of movement about him, and the way he throws his kicks, he doesn't really fire so much the body kick. He almost does what looks like more of a variation of a Thai kick and a question mark slash Brazilian kick, like the way that it comes up with how high his knee gets. And the attack of it looks like it's aimed more at the shoulder and higher, so it looks like it kind of comes more on a regular basis as a high kick as opposed to a sharp get high on the toes and go straight to your body, at least the way he threw it in this fight. Whereas Pat Boonsong was a guy who just, he kept trying to get a hold of him and kept running into a lot of that offense and just kept, you know, eating a lot of those shots and eventually was able to close the distance in the fourth round. But before he closed the fourth round, Sukpet, in all of his movement and all of his scoring, he was able to get an elbow through, and the elbow opened up a pretty sizable cut. And once that cut opened up, he was bleeding freely. Pat Boonsong was like determined to just close the distance, get a hold of the clinch, and really look to score a lot of knees in tight. The moment he starts unleashing these knees, there was one period of time where he had literally backed Sukpet into the corner and just threw so many knees to the body that Sukpet gave up on pummeling and literally put his left hand to his ribs to protect himself. And as Pat Boonsong kept throwing the knees, he looked like his body was just like breaking down, like he was, you know, using a huge hammer on a house and just slowly just breaking it down. And then Sukpet was able to get out of that exchange, and then he just spent the whole round just kind of surviving because his body was so hurt. And Pat Boonsong is all over him, scoring well. And he was so beaten up at the point towards the end of the round where there was a moment where Pat Boonsong just threw Sukpet on the ground with like little effort, and Sukpet just fell and slowly got up. But into round five, you see that Boonsong, like, you know, Pat Boonsong, I was like, okay, you know, as I'm watching this fight, I didn't know the result before I'd start watching it. I was like, okay, he's going to take over this fight. If he doesn't go for the stoppage, he's going to win the decision. Not in my mind realizing how high they're going to score that cut. Sukpet came out. I think he was able to get a sweep dump early in the round, and then he scored, and he spent the most of the round but going backwards. And as he was going backwards and Pat Boonsong was going forward, it hit me. I was like, oh man, there, Pat Boonsong's down because of the cut. Like, I didn't realize it until that very moment, but that's huge. The cut was the difference. For those of you who are listening to my podcast, when I was talking about it, I want to say, 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, when Bukau had his loss, the main thing that you hear people from Thailand talk about was that Bukau got cut. And he fought back brilliantly, and he had an awesome second round where he pretty much dominated second round with knees and elbows in close or whatever. But the only thing anybody talked about was, but Bukau got cut, you know. And in my mind, I was like, if you follow Sylvie, the woman from Thailand, who posts a lot of things or whatever, she was talking about how she got in a conversation and she was trying to sell people on, but Bukau came back in a second, and all anybody talked about was the cut. It shows that it's a cultural part of the scoring that if you get cut, it ranks really, really high. So for those who get a chance to check this fight out to see what I'm talking about, Pat Boonsong, PetBoonsong versus Sukpet, Sakpet, and you're going to see Sukpet get a decision where in your mind, because of watching the fourth round, you're going to be like, how could that happen? But if you see the cut that scored before Pat Boonsong got the knees going, you'll see that, okay, it deals with the scoring. That's how they score things in Thailand. They really rank getting cut very, very high, so you don't want to be in the cut end of that. Next fight we're going to talk about is Yodzilla Fairtex as he takes on Choktawadi. Yodzilla kept looking for what would be his right elbow or his lead elbow. And he really started, like, you know, revving it up from in close. Like, he would get a hold of the top of the glove and fire. He'd use his lead jab and then come in and then fire afterwards. He really stalked Chuck Dawe down through the whole, you know, fight. And then all of a sudden, towards the end of the round, it's not the fight that, or the score that put the fight away, but it was the one that got the ball rolling. Whereas you could see Chuck Dawe in exchange. He caught a really good lead right elbow, and then I could see him kind of dazed before, and I go, okay, he's going to look to go back to that right elbow. Yotsil's going to look to go back to that way, that elbow to get Chuck Dawe out of the fight. But what happened was Chuck Dawe, to buy himself some time, he threw a body kick, and we threw a body kick. Yotsil caught the kick and then threw a strike out of it, and then that just knocked out a guy who was pretty much already in bad shape beforehand. So good job by Yotsil, who really did put on a mean performance where he pushed the pace, walked forward. Yotsila, Yodsila, and then he was able to get the KO stoppage over Chuck Dawe, Choktawee. So definitely check that fight out, and you'll see him talking about pretty smooth KO. Going to move on to a very small guy. So I believe this was fight took place at 105 pounds, if I'm remembering correctly. And we're talking about Pentor and Mew. In the new Limpede Stadium, the last few fights I've mentioned to you, sorry, we started off with the Raja Stadium fights. Yotsila was a new Limpede fight that took place on August 25th, and we are also going to do another fight from that card, and Pentor and Mew on that same new Limpede Stadium card. In this, we want to mention that Mew, I mean, Pentor does a lot of slick things. Like, he had some moments where he changes angles really good. He was able, when clinches happened, he would usually switch his feet. He wouldn't really stay in a position where he was, like, right in front of the guy. He would, like, usually angle off to the side. And I really like that he was able to look for some of his kicking offense and his movement and his slick scores. And he scored elbows. He was moving really well, and he's keeping himself out of reach. But Pentor was a machine, and he just kept walking forward, got in a full clinch. And Pentor, when we get to the last round, it would seem that he was being so cute and sly for the most of it. But when we went back to the corner after round four, they were like, hey, you've lost all the positions of the fight where you needed to be strong. So now you've got to go out there and let them hands go so we could possibly get back into this. And he came out and he tried to be more aggressive. And literally right off the back, if you want to see what a strong clinch looks like, and Mew didn't even throw any knees. He just kind of held the clinch. But he's going to get full clinch. Like, you hear the term full Thai palm if you ever watch MMA. It's rare that you see that kind of full clinch in Thailand because the guys are too good. They're too good for that to work. You're usually going to see them work one where they've got one hand up by the neck with their forearm and the collarbone, and the other hand's going to be controlling the bicep or the turn of the elbow. So you're always going to see people in those ranges when they work clinch in the stadiums. You're going to see a higher level version of a clinch, a more active version of the clinch. Whereas in this fight, because of the strength Mew had, when Pinto was trying to, you know, he'd been slick so much early on, when he tried to really push the pace and try to get himself back into the fight, he literally, I mean, it looked like just iron jaws, just kind of locked in on him for two clinches in a row. He was not able to do enough to get himself back in the fight. Mew gets the victory. Very simple names here. Pentor versus Mew, Mew. Going to go ahead and move to the next fight on this card. And Kenkart is able to get a victory over, I hope I'm pronouncing this gentleman's name correctly, Phnom Rongleck. And Phnom Rongleck was a guy who, this fight, if I'm going to be honest to you, it was not the most entertaining fight because I had seen a couple other fights before that really had me go, like, really got my attention, really got me into the fights. Really, the pace of them were really good. But this one has some slick things, and it's at a pace where if you want to learn a little bit about how they position their arms in pummeling and how they play in space, this is a good fight to pay attention to it because the pace doesn't really pick up. It kind of stays at the same tempo the whole time. So definitely check this one out. Kenkart, Kengkart. He got a decision victory over Phnom Rongleck, Phnom Rongleck, New Limpede. The only other notable I want to say is there was one really slick moment that Kenkart was. He had reached and kind of walked himself into clinch a couple times. And then one time, I want to say in the third round, he extended both arms and he started to walk and look for the knee. And he picked his right knee up and then he put it down and he fired the left elbow. It was really slick to kind of play with that kind of stuff. But Kenkart was able to get the decision victory there. Next fight I'm going to talk about is Extra's KO victory over Extra versus Awat Lek. One moment. Sorry, a second. I don't know if you guys are hearing that. I got a light. One moment. Sorry, I don't know if you guys noticed that interruption at all, but there was just something, a slight little buzz coming out of my computer for a moment there. But I'm back at it. Sorry about that. Extra gets a KO victory over Awat Lek. Extra is literally spelled just like, you know, give me extra. Extra versus Awat Lek. Awutlek. And the thing that I want to mention about this fight is, you, for those of you who pay attention to the stadium fights or pay attention to how they fight in Thailand, it's pretty common for them to fight in a with their power hand forward. Like, that's usually going to be the kill hand. They're usually going to fight with that hand forward. And sometimes when they go for finishes in the stadiums, the punches get a little bit wide and they get a little bit, you know, the range is more to hurt as opposed to looking for clean, effective pinpoint shots. So sometimes you'll hear people, you know, who are a little critical of the stadium guys and their boxing and how well they throw in pockets and how well they, you know, throw clean, effective striking. Sometimes you'll hear that. Not all the time, but sometimes you'll hear there's a community of people who get on them for their boxing. Extra is an example of how he is the polar opposite of anything that you've ever heard. First of all, he came out throwing clean combinations. Jab, jab, cross, 1-2, 3-2. Like, he was able to throw so many combinations, long, straight punches. But the thing that I liked about it the most was after they were in exchange where he scored a knee and Awat Lek returned a knee, he threw a right hand where he angled it and he went a pinpoint shot. He went to a specific spot and he was able to catch right, you know, come right around the side as opposed to going straight down, and then the shot just really just dropped Awat Lek and he went down. And it's the kind of stuff that doesn't get enough credit when you pay attention to people watching striking. It's the difference between doing the technique right and then putting the technique where you want it to be. So if, you know, you're watching, for those who watch USA football, there's a difference between throwing a ball that a guy can run under and then throwing a pass where it's just right on the money, you know. Or for those of you guys who are just, you know, huge soccer fans / football fans around the world, there's a difference between doing a set pass where a guy does an amazing job of beating the defense and he's able to get a header on it, and then just a perfect pass where it's just only him. Only he's got an opportunity to get his head on this kind of pass. In that way, you can throw strikes where you're like, okay, I already know my fist is landing on the targets, but I'm going to throw a specific shot to land in a specific spot to score a certain type of reaction. And Extra was able to put this type of right hand on Awat Lek, and he went down and was done. Good stuff there by Extra. Next, we're going to go to Sungmin Nee as he gets a victory over Mung Lek Dai. My favorite thing about this Sungmin Nee victory is, first of all, it just seemed like it was the easiest victory in the world at the beginning. He was really letting the left leg go. He was scoring with hook elbows a lot, threw a lot of 3-2, but the 2 was an elbow. Just kind of played a distance game. And then Mung Dai, realizing that I'm just going to get outpointed and just, you know, the fight's just going to be over with me just kind of watching if I try to play a technical game back with him. Mung Dai just decided to just push the pace and just went right after him, started to be aggressive, started to look to go into the clinch. And then after he had scored a few times, it was almost like he woke Sungmin Nee up. And if you want to see a great example of, and this is just a loose example, Roy Jones Jr. is very popular because he's able to fight going backwards. So there's a lot of things that, not only with his hand speed and the where he plays, but he can go backwards when guys are looking for offense and still find effective offense. A Thai version of what it looks like when somebody fights well backwards looks like what Sungmin Nee did to Mung Dai, where he just ran him into so many power left legs, just taking, you know, step back, left leg, 2 steps back, left leg. And because Mung Dai is looking to get in the clinch, looking to close the distance, he was just running into all of that. And every once in a while, he'd throw a 3-2 in there, and every once in a while, he'd throw an elbow. But he just kept Mung Dai playing second, just running into it. Really check this fight out. Sungmin Nee, popular, he's been mentioned before, fine Thai fight. I'm not the biggest fan of Thai fight anymore, but Sungmin Nee is definitely a guy of note. Sungmanee versus Mung Dai, Mungthai. Watch this fight, and you're going to see a guy who fights backwards extremely well. He runs Mung Dai into so much offense, in particular that fourth round. You'll see it. There's going to be a moment where he's just picking him apart, and then Mung Dai starts to push the pace, and then Sungmin Nee says, enough of that, and just starts running him and starts getting mean with that left leg. Mung Dai was able to get the check up some of the time, but in the end, he's just playing defense with the other guy just kicking him. So great job by Sungmin Nee in this victory. The fight that you most have to see you 100% have to see is Rotlek versus Pacquiao. R-O-T-L-E-K versus P-O-K-K-E-A-W. And the reason why you want to see Rotlek versus Pacquiao is because this is an elbow battle. The reason why I knew this fight was going to be awesome is because I follow all, you know, I've got friends, you know, a lot of Facebook friends because of the kickboxing podcast show. And I go down there and I've got friends from all over the world. And I just started to see Rotlek versus Pacquiao pop up on a bunch of people's walls. And I was like, I don't even need to see this to know that some awesome sporting violence went down. So as I go through it, pick up the card, and the next thing I know, I see all of these big-time victories, or excuse me, all these big-time elbows, big-time in-space exchanges, big-time in-space competitive edge where both guys are like, I'm not leaving. I'm getting my offense right here, right now. And you're going to see some of the most awesome elbows that you're going to see in a fight. There's going to be some times where they go 1-2 and they post and they fire an elbow. There's going to be one guy who blocks and he fires an elbow in return. You're going to see another time where guys throw an exchange, slide an elbow through. They just mix it up and they're so aggressive. In the third round, I want to say that there were like no kicks. I want to say the third round was all knees and elbows. And to the best of my memory, watch it. Go ahead and check my work on it. But I believe that entire round is all knees and elbows. The thing that changed the fight was towards the end of the fourth round, Rotlek had found some offense, some consistent offense, where there was about a 15-second spurt where he was just all over Pacquiao, backed him up towards the ropes and towards the turnbuckle or towards the corner, and he really let his hands go and scored a lot of big knees, a lot of big elbows, a lot of big hands in that space. It really is important that people check this kind of fight out so you can see what elbow play looks like on the highest level, because these guys were going out, just going after each other. It was an out-of-control fight. You'll love it. Check out Rotlek versus Pacquiao. Awesome stadium stuff there. And I hope you guys like the breakdown that I have of the stadium fights. Going to go ahead and return to the kickboxing world. We're going to go ahead and go to the W5. W5 is a promotion I've talked about before. You've had a lot of people in, you know, on their fight cards before of great note. I've mentioned you guys before my love for Enrico Gokia, who was able to fight in this card. He's one of their more notable names. They've also given opportunities for female kickboxers and, Nabayev, another guy who I absolutely love, another guy who got a lot of play on their promotion. This card didn't have the crowd that other fight cards had. There have definitely been bigger crowds. But it did have some names in kickboxing that we really should be listening to and we should be seeing on a more regular basis. Chris Ngannou is one of those names. And Chris Ngannou is a guy who, there was talk of him being the little weight or the smaller weight Remy Bonjasky at one period of time. Why would anybody say that? Because of jumping knees. He scored so many big KOs with the jumping knees. He had really good timing in it, flash kicks. He doesn't really have a combination to low kick offense. He can score in moments, but he plays with the power 1-2. He looks for single kicks. But in the end, he looks for, you know, opportunities to open up jumping knees and so on. This fight kind of carried a pace where Ilya Usachev, who he met, this was a four-man tournament, this was the final of that, and when he met Usachev in the final fight, Usachev did a good job of just kind of playing with just small offense, but he didn't really have that kind of that stick. Like, he didn't have the kind of power to really affect Chris Ngannou. And every once in a while, Chris Ngannou would open up with a power 1-2. But Usachev just kind of played the game, looked for body shots, movements, looked for kicks here and there. And then all of a sudden, he throws a hook. Chris Ngannou keeps his guard up high and fires a counter knee right afterwards. Boom. All under the chin, gone. Now, this is an example of probably one of the worst 10 counts. It's not the worst 10 count of the year. Unchallenged Jérôme Lebanners, the 10 count he got in France is the longest 10 count in the history of 10 counts. But Usachev was given a long opportunity to get himself up to his feet. And when he finally got up to his feet, it was like on six. And I'm telling you, he was blasted away. You can look this fight up if you guys want to check it out. Basically, it is Ilya, I-L-I-A, Usachev, U-S-A-C-H-E-V versus Chris Ngannou. Chris, of course, normal, N-G-I-N-B-I. Go ahead, look for that. Put that into your YouTube search engine right now. And you go ahead and watch this big-time knee score from Chris Ngannou. Watch how his opponent is just on the mat and out of it. And what would be an easy, clear KO call for anybody else, you are going to watch them struggle with the decision and give him every opportunity to get up. And by the time he gets to his feet, the ref is literally on like 5 or 6. And the ref is really, he's clearly concussed. Like, he's walking around out of it, like he is dazed. It is without a doubt he is in bad shape. And you would want to think that, okay, someone is going to stop this fight. But the ref was, you know, ready to let the fight continue so that Usyk could take another big shot. But wisely, his corner had gotten up and they were standing in the corner like the fight's over with, this big shiny shot. That's what we got to have more of. We got to have more coaches looking out for their athletes. If you know your guy's in bad shape and he's only going to get hurt worse, go ahead and get him out of there. Don't go thinking that he's got to fight back just because, you know what I'm saying? Just because it's just what you do or it's against heart. Your guy will come back and fight another day. Maybe Usyk wins against Chris Nogumi the next time around. But clearly, he took a big knee. He was out. It should have been a KO call. The ref gave him time that he did not deserve, and he didn't need because the fight was over with, and it should have been stopped immediately. As for Chris Nogumi, moving forward, this is a guy who was once a Showtime champion. He's a guy who's still has an exciting style. He's a very intelligent guy. We're talking about a guy who got his degree. He is a lawyer on the side. I think that is how he makes his money full time. That's how he takes care of his family. He's a good, solid kickboxer to be using on promotions. When it's Showtime, when he was fighting for them on a regular basis, it was in that gap where K1 wasn't around as much. Use him. Use him as a name. Have some, you know, your Robert Van Roosmalens, have your, you know, your Steve Moxons, your Reese McAllisters, have them go against Chris Nogumi. That's a fun fight, fun fight. Robin's your champion, so if you don't want to do that, I understand. But I'm saying Reese McAllister, that's a good fight to make. You know, like, there's some fun fights out there. Jordan Watson, make some fights with Chris Nogumi. Bring him in. We got to see more of the 70kg division. Chris Nogumi, who won this one at 71kgs, I'm just looking at his body frame right now. He could easily get himself back down to 70kgs and would do it for the money and the opportunity. So Chris Nogumi is a name we need to be using more. Cosmo Alexander gets a victory on the same card. It gets a victory over Marco Piquet. Marco Piquet is a guy who I actually thought was past it, and then he had a really good performance against Corley earlier in the year on the debut of the Liver Kick, Legacy kickboxing event that happened in Houston. He was in the first edition of that one and looked really good against Corley. Here, Marco Piquet continued to get, you know, opportunities throughout the year. He just didn't let his hands go. Cosmo Alexander is already set to fight. After this fight, he's set to go against Jiawen Parr in California. And that's going to be, I want to say it's for the Lion Fight title or whatever. Even if it's not for the title, it's still going to be, they're 1-1 against each other. Cosmo Alexander got a stoppage. I think I want to say it was low kicks in a tournament. Whereas Jiawen Parr won the straight-up battle because Cosmo Alexander just waits too much on his offense. And Jiawen Parr doesn't wait for offense at all. Jiawen Parr doesn't even care if he gets hit. His goal is to let them hands go, to push the pace, to make you fight every minute of a 25-minute fight. He is not waiting on nothing. He's coming to get you. And Cosmo Alexander did a good job of, you know, he had a variation where he landed a combination of hook to low kick. But most of this fight was him taking moments to explode with some hands. And especially with his left hook, he's really getting his hooks in. And then he would look to finish his combination with the knee. Combination, knee. And Marco Piquet just never threw enough. If Marco Piquet landed all the offense he threw, he still would have lost because he didn't throw enough offense. Like, he just, I'm watching him, like, at one period of time, I had to recheck it. But they had him listed as landing one of 15 strikes after the second round, if I saw that correctly. That's ridiculous. You can't win at this level. You can't win at novice level throwing that least. You got to let them hands go. And Marco Piquet, I know he's older, but he definitely, you know, he's given himself a better chance to score. And who knows what happened. Could have been injured, could have been sick. Doesn't know what went into it. But the thing that kind of shows up the most is if he doesn't land something that kind of like open somebody's eyes up, the pace of a fight allows him to just slowly lose, or just slowly lose to guys who are outscoring him. Whereas once upon a time, he had some pretty good explosion and was still able to win rounds. Remember, he won round 3 when he fought Yosin Klai like 5 years ago. He's had some really good outings. He was up on Nicky Holtzkin before he was stopped and dropped too late in those fights. Like, he's had some good outings in his career. PK just hasn't bring in the consistency. Cosmo Alexander still getting the opportunity to fight kickboxing and Muay Thai. Like I said, he already has his next fight set up. I don't know if there is a future for him at high-level kickboxing in terms of fighting in the best in glory, but he's still a really good name, and I think that I would use him and I'd give him that opportunity because Cosmo is still very skilled, and he's one of the more defensive-savvy guys in the kick, kick-fighting world. So good one for him, and we'll see what happens when he fights Jian Wei Par in October. Last fight in this card I'm going to talk about is Enrico Gogokia, as he gets a 5-round decision over Fouad Sadaghi. And the thing with this was a 5-round sweep of Gogokia over Sadaghi, and Gogokia did a really good job of just a steady jab, and not just a jab in terms of this one's really going to, you know, rock the head back and, you know, really have a snap to it. It was a disruptor. It was a blinder. He just kept putting it in Sadaghi's face, and Sadaghi would just keep his guard up. The next thing you know, he'd throw a mean combination behind it where he put a bunch of hooks and straight lefts, uppercuts, and just bop, 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 move, bop, 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 like he's scoring fives and six, and he just let it go. Second round, he starts to go for his outside low kick. One of my favorite things about Enrico Gogokia is the fact that he looks to score at the rear leg low kick. It's a very high-level thing to do because most people are scared because you're lined up, him being a southpaw, he's lined up with the right hand of the other guy. But because he believes in his ability to distract and get enough momentum with his hook, he's able to get the distraction upstairs. He's able to get the defense focus upstairs on Sadaghi or anybody else that he fights. And then he finds that power kick to the back leg. Very, very skilled, very, very talented with it. I'm hoping for more in the future because this guy is, I cannot believe that he's not fighting in K1. Or if he were to fight Murat Gregorian right now for the K1 title, I would pick Enrico Gogokia. He's very talented. He needs to be fighting that level of guy. He needs to be fighting, as I mentioned before, the Steve Moxons and the Reese McAllisters and the Jordan Watsons. And he needs to be fighting this level of guy. He needs to have these opportunities. So I would love to see him fight on a glory card. He's definitely talented enough. I wasn't the biggest fan of the decision, but, you know, he got a victory, you know, he's got a loss to Askarov, which would be considered a step-up fight. He's doing all right, but then he tried a jumping knee, and then he got caught over the top, just clean KO. So he does have that kind of significant loss. But he also has got some solid wins on his resume, despite the fact that he lost his MBDs and he lost a fight that I thought that he won. That was the one that I think I was thinking of. He's got some wins out there. He's got some wins. He's good enough to fight the elite. He just has to get the opportunity. So let's see what happens with Enrico Gogokia. I want to see more from this guy. He's very, very talented. Going to go ahead and move to Venom Victory World Series event. The card took place in Hungary, and basically there was a four-man tournament won by Mustafa Haida. I'll go ahead and go into the results of it as I wasn't able to get a hold of all the fights. I'll talk about some of the fights of note. First and foremost, the tournament. Familiar names, Mustafa Haida, this guy I've mentioned before. He is a guy who, I mean, he's fought in Fusion. He's fought, you know, internationally. He's got a glory loss to, if I'm remembering this correctly, Jordan Watson. I think he's got a glory loss to him. I think he might have a victory over Andy Sauer, but, like, he is a name that's been out there. He gets a victory in the first round of a decision over Benedet Zsolt from Hungary. And then he will move on. He moves on to face Abdullah Mabel, a guy who I've talked about several times. Mabel, who fought in Lion Fight, he fought against Bokal back in the past. You know, I think he's got a couple of victories over some Thai notables. I think he continues to be. He's one of the Nasiksin boys. He's been consistent in the sport. He's made a great career, been all over the world. A solid job by Abdul Mabel, who's going to look back on his fight life and be like, man, I really did to the best of my ability. He gets a unanimous decision over Norbert Balog, and they go on to fight in the final, and Haida gets the victory over Mabel. Again, Mabel is just, he is who he is. He's more aggression. I think he's better for a full rules tie because of, you know, when he gets in the clinch, he looks for elbows, he looks for knees, but really he just looks to kind of be aggressive and push on you. And if he gets space, he might play with some spin kicks or some fun stuff, but for the most part, he's a grinder. He wants to get on you, wants to use his weight, wants to kind of bring that type of fight to you. I look at, what happened with Mustafa Haida. I think that he's a guy with a couple wins, could be a regular on a glory roster. They just don't have enough fights for him to be a regular. So continue to fight, continue to improve your skills. A Steve Moxon level guy would be a good guy for you to go against. Kai Hollenbach would also be an okay guy if he wanted to return. I think that he's an all right fighter, and I'd like to see him more down the road. The last fight I want to talk about in this card is Anissa Mexen as she takes on Sulia. Jeskiewicz. I believe I said that last name right, Jeskiewicz. And my thing with Anissa Mexen is she's one of the best fighters in the world. I would love for her to fight more. She's probably fought about 4 or 5 times this year, which isn't bad. But really, Infusion gave her a couple of TV spots earlier in the year. So she got 2 victories in that. And then I want to say she had like maybe 3 fights in the first 3 months of the year, 4 months of the year. And then she kind of had a gap in the summer into this fight. She's talented. I want to see more of her. Clearly, because of their weight class, because they have so many elite fighters, it's still top heavy with just 2 people. And the way that, you know, the mixed martial arts world, when they look at their 125 division, you know, they got Dobson and they've got Johnson going tonight. You've got 2 people sitting at the top of it. And you're like, okay, it's all about these 2 getting together. And they got together once and there was a winner. We want to see it again because it was so great. In that way, I want to see, you know, Iman Barlow and Anissa Mexen go at it again. They should really be fighting like once a year, once every 2 years, because they're the elite. They're elite at 54 kg. So I'm excited to see more from them coming up down the road. Going to go ahead and move to some news and notes. Artem Lavin out. He was originally supposed to be fighting Joe Schilling. Now, there's a lot of people who are upset about this because Artem Lavin was in a really close fight with Simon Marcus, and because of that fight, people thought that it should have been a no-brainer that there at minimum be a rematch right away because the fight was a draw. And due to that draw, Artem Lavin was then scheduled to fight Joe Schilling, which people weren't going too crazy about. They're upset because they wanted to see the next fight, but when it makes TV sense to use the most popular and pretty much the most elite record-wise, and Joe Schilling, as he's got the most notable wins over people that you know about in the kickboxing world at 187 pounds, or middleweight for them. So when that fight was put together, people were all excited. Thought it was going to be entertaining. I kind of had a lean towards Artem Lavin winning it again. But Joe Schilling, of course, he'd been, you know, they trained together. He brought him in as a training partner once. Joe Schilling, felt Artem Lavin wasn't giving him enough due. So he kind of was like, you know, friendship over. I'm now really super motivated to have this fight. And then Artem Lavin is injured. Jason Wilnes is in. Jason Wilnes had some really good outings this last couple of, opportunities for the Glory brand. I think that he is a strong guy, gets combination kick stuff going early. He could be in good shape. Joe Schilling, of course, has always been hittable, but he has a really weird style about him. It's so weird to kind of understand how Joe Schilling finds offense from both stance. I say it all the time. If you watch him hit the pad sometimes, I'm like, this dude's going to be a straight-up body-kicking Thai style guy. And then you watch him fight. He's moving angles, and he's throwing weird stuff, and he's coming up with big-time knees and Superman punches, and he's a different kind of fighter. I'm excited to see what happens with the fight with him and Wilnes. I'm fine with it. I think it's going to be an entertaining scrap. We got the return of Pat Barry. Pat Barry is going to be going against Carl Robertson. He's the guy who just fought Jerome O'Banner. Should have been a KO victory for him because I did think that he'd scored a big-time shot. I thought that that was the longest, 10-count in the history of 10 counts, as I mentioned earlier on the show and as I mentioned when it happened. Carl Robertson getting the opportunity in Glory is awesome. That's how it happens. You go against the guy, then all of a sudden you're the guy. You know what I'm saying? You're the guy who you fought in such a notable way. Even if you lose, people want to use you. And I thought that that's what happened here. And I'm excited that he's getting to perform. And I want to see more of him. And I'm curious to see how he does. Pat Barry, it's all about getting to a guy who can throw consistent offense again. Sometimes it looks like Pat's looking to just kill guys because of how his MMA style of game. Whereas if he just got himself to a combination low kick game, I think he'd just be just absolutely unbeatable. I won't say unbeatable because he's a little older, but I'm saying he'd go back to a game where he could go against elite level guys. The type of style of combination kick that could really get guys in bad shape because his low kick whip is for real. It's just the consistency and the ability. That's what happens when you get older. You can't throw it. You're seeing it, but you can't throw it like you used to when you were younger. You can't pull the trigger. If Pat can just get to a simple jab, low kick, hook, low kick game, I think that he could have a lot of success against Roberson. But if it turns into whatever reason, if you're Roberson, you got to imagine that Roberson is going to come out and just try to throw some heat, try to throw some shots that can, test Pat's chin and see how much is there. I know that's got to be his goal, but I'm interested to see how Barry does on this card. So Should be good stuff. They mentioned a tournament. More will be released on the tournament later. All in all, I'm glad that I was able to get back and do the podcast show. There are some things that were mentioned. Paul Daly's got a kickboxing fight versus Gonzalez on the double car or the Dynamite show that they got, which is a mix of kickboxing and MMA. I'll get into that stuff a little bit later. I'm going to go ahead and wrap the show up. And Georgia Petrosian getting a Kunlun victory over Zhu Yan. And the reason why I want to bring this fight up is Georgia Petrosian, of course, still an awesome, amazing fighter. Very, very skilled. This was easy work for him. He was able to score a lot with his knees because he's always been awesome with the step-up knees. Scored his hands, and Zhu Yan looked like he wanted to go in a second. He was able to get to the third before he needed the body, put it away. Georgia Petrosian, to me, is still the most skilled kickboxer in the world. I want to see Robin Ron Ruzmalin go against him. Those are the guys, you know what I'm saying? And Sitichai, who it's, and actually, that's another thing. Gogaki, who I was mentioning earlier, he has a victory over Sitichai on a glory undercard fight. Most people feel that he didn't win that fight, but he's got that victory out there. Georgia Petrosian versus Sitichai, I want to see it. I want to see that. That'd be awesome. I want to see him versus Robin Van Roosmalen again, because when they fought, he won. And if we're going to call Robin Van Roosmalen the best in the world, we got to see him beat Georgia Petrosian, because Georgia Petrosian is still alive. So I want to see Giorgio back in there with the best. But it looks like Glory 25 is going to be in Italy, and they're going to be using him. So I don't care who they use. It's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a lot of fun to see him return to the elite level. I want to see Petrosian go against anybody in the world. Good stuff. Good decision there. And then the last note, I think I'm going to end. I'll go ahead and add one more. Glory could possibly be on Showtime as far as in the States are concerned. Most of you guys aren't as familiar with Showtime if you're in other countries. But basically, Showtime is a... they are the cable provider or premium channel that came right after HBO. Home Box Office was first. Showtime came right after it, if I'm remembering my timeline correctly. And they have done a good job of, they've got their own specialized TV shows. Like Weeds was one of their shows, if you're familiar with the show Weeds. They've got this history of committing to combat sports, and Showbox is one of those commitments. Showbox is a show that really, it's, you look at their audiences, they're not the hugest draw, you don't look at their crowds and go, oh man, everybody's there, everybody wants to see this brand of boxing. But they give what they call matches between this guy 8-0, this guy 8-0. Let's see who's for real about being, who's got the for real record here. Sometimes boxers find their first test on that brand, and it's not the most entertaining, exciting, competition in the world. Like, a lot of times it's just a blowout, or somebody is, exposed as not as good as we thought they were. Showtime has committed to that brand of boxing for years. If they are interested in the kickboxing brand, what that means, what the most important thing that means is, number one, all the fights are going to be on that broadcast. You're going to cut all 12, 13 fights, whatever it is, it's going to be found in one place. Very, very important. We got to have that consistently. We cannot have go here from one fight and then next week on this channel you get this, or you got your pay-per-view option. We definitely get the consistency that comes with just having one place to watch the whole card, and that's huge. So be on the lookout for if it happens, if after Spike doesn't, and I think Spike likes having kickboxing. I think they do like it, especially with the what's going on with the brand of Dynamite and so on. I think that they are excited about the opportunity to have their promotion get pushed a lot by MMA and what's going on with Bellator's having a really, really good year for Bellator. So I think that they like having that connection, having those advertisements. There's a good chance that Glory could still end up on Spike. But as far as viewership, as far as watching the whole card, as far as this is what's going down this night, the entire Glory card being on Showtime would be awesome. I would absolutely love that. So definitely give it a shot. Thank you, everybody, for listening. I'm sorry for the big gap. I'll try to be back, try to get some interviews. I'm excited about what's coming from the kickboxing sport. I'm excited about the next couple of years. I like that Glory's already got a Denver card. It's looking like an Italy card in November. They had a really good year. They were very consistent. Kunlun was super consistent this year, too. They just didn't give us a good enough map to follow. Originally, that Petrosian fight was possibly going to be Yotsenkai. I mean, I remember hearing that. I was like, no, I'll wait till I see it. But happy that big things are happening. I would like more of a map. I'd like more of a, this is what the story's saying, as opposed to I'm fighting here against this guy you don't know about or this new up-and-comer. But I just like that there's a lot of kickboxing opportunities, and I like that I'm sitting down, and I just gave you guys a podcast that did 2 weeks of fighting, and I did like, you know, 3 or 4 cards all over the world. I gave you some stadium, gave you some glory news, gave you some you know, fight card in France, or Hungary, fight card in Russia. Like, I like that I can tell you guys this is what's going on in your sport, and it's happening all over the world. So thank you very much for listening. God bless everybody, and have a really good weekend or week wherever you are. I'll try to be back with the interview next week. Peace.